20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back, Packers fans, to the Pack-A-Day Podcast. It's Thursday. We are another day closer to hopefully getting the taste of that terrible Week 1 performance by the Green Bay Packers out of our mouths. I am one half of your Thursday crew, Jason Perrone. You can also find me over at Game On Wisconsin. I do the Quick Slants podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Jason Perrone. With me, as always, on the other side of the U.S. is Mark Eckel. Mark, are you at all recovered from what you watched on Sunday?
Yeah, I'm fine. I got the taste out of my mouth from drinking a lot of scotch. So,
well, there you have it. Well, around the world, because we got another good round of weather here, and I don't know if I'm going to go perfectly from east to west, but we'll start with Robin Erickson in Oslo, Norway, as we always do. So it sounds like actually he's in Skagerrak. I'm sure I did not pronounce that correct. It's between Norway and Denmark. He's on his way. He's on a ferry to Copenhagen. 60 degrees Fahrenheit, gray skies, wind at 13 meters per second. So quite a bit of waves.
That's windy, right?
It would seem like that would be windy. Yes, for sure. It's windy there. And then our friend Ricard in Sweden, holding up a glass and toasting to the outcome of the Swedish election there. He said the nights are cold, low of 50 degrees during in the daytime, high is mid-60s, if we're lucky. So it's cooling off a little bit over there in Europe. And then our friend, we have two from Germany. We have Istvan, and we also have our friend Felix over at the Vineyard. So he said it's a little cooler, low of 55, and a high of 66 degrees Fahrenheit. That's not too bad. I guess that's not warm for us, but it's not too bad. More rain expected in the next couple days, and then some windy conditions. So, you know, I guess the wind is picking up there a little bit. And then I don't know where Istvan is himself. It's pretty, well, he says same thing. Temperature 64, 48, so Western Germany. He's back from his vacation. And then Gerard in Brussels, Belgium. 65 degrees, heavy rain the whole day. So pretty consistent.
Yeah.
And I do, I always appreciate, as I say, I will never take for granted, I always appreciate them converting Fahrenheit to Celsius.
Oh, yeah, because it would take us half the show to figure it out.
Half the show at least. So that is our European contingent. I think I got everybody in there. And so that brings us stateside to Myrtle Beach, where Mark Eckel resides. What's happening at the beach this week?
Beautiful, beautiful weather here. 80. Not humid at all, sunny, just perfect weather right now.
Nice. You're in pretty good shape there. And then in Green Bay, where Paul Bredel sits, 81 degrees, partly sunny.
Wow.
Not too bad, huh?
That's pretty good for Green Bay, isn't it?
Yeah, 70% humidity. Now, Isaac Hanks, our meteorologist friend in northern Illinois, in Hampshire, Illinois, says after a brief brush with early fall, temperatures in the 60s, back to sunny summer-like weather, 70 to 80 for the most part. And he said, because I was talking about how it's been a lot hotter and it's still hot in Phoenix and all that kind of stuff, but he said, among your three locations, the hottest summer award goes to Myrtle Beach, followed by Green Bay, while Phoenix actually had a slightly cooler summer, which we did because we had rain for such a long time every day. It actually kept us under 100 when we were normally in the 105 to 110 range. So it sounds like, according to the averages, you had a warmer than usual summer by more than the rest of us.
Oh, it was. I told you. But see, again, I live on the beach, so I get that. I notice it just from going like in front of my building, like to go get my car.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are days I go outside. If I'm going somewhere, I'll be like, man, it's hot. It's really hot. And then I'll come back home and I'll like either go on my balcony or go out to the beach or pool. It's a 10-degree difference just from the front to the back. I mean, just because the ocean breeze makes a huge difference. It really does.
Yeah.
I wouldn't live inland if I, you know, living here. I would not want to live inland because it does get hot.
Yeah.
It's a really noticeable difference.
Yeah, hot and humid during the summer, humid.
Yeah, and it's humid, but that, like I said, that breeze it just changes everything.
Makes
anyone who's ever lived on any coast knows that you know, it changes everything.
Yeah.
For the good, I mean. So anyway,
yeah.
What do we have out in Arizona?
Yeah, it definitely does. 95, sunny. We don't cool off until after Halloween, so it's still going to be warm. It's going to be in the 90s for me and still summer-ish out here in the Phoenix.
The Cardinals had the roof closed last week.
They always do. They're terrible.
Oh.
And it didn't make a difference. They closed. They say that the original Cowboys Stadium had a hole in the roof so God could watch his team play. Right. The Cardinals closed the roof to keep God from having to watch them.
So God doesn't want to watch
them. Does not want to watch them at all. So yeah, no love lost between me and the Arizona Cardinals. You know that. And then our friend Harry in Kamloops said that he called it the death of summer. Said the wildfire smoke from California and Washington has actually provided shade until the storms show up. So Thursday, high of 77, which is still pretty warm. But later in this coming weekend, the lows are going to get down to 43. But he says he's still wearing shorts as an act of resistance. There's a lot of people in Wisconsin that would shovel their driveways in shorts in the middle of January. And they were always in shorts because they just refused. They're like, I don't care. I'm fighting it. So that's what they did there. But
I love stuff like that.
So we're into fall here, and that means that the Packers season is kicked off. And I know that a billion different shows and things have already been said about the Packers game, but we haven't had a chance to share any of our thoughts. We obviously aren't going to go deep dive because a lot has already been said about it. But just really quick now, and I guess from the perspective, Mark, of being 4 days removed from what we saw on Sunday, how are you feeling?
I mean, I'm disappointed in the way that the Packers played. I'm never happy after they lose, especially if they lose to the Vikings, a team I dislike more than any other team in the league. But it's the first week, so I'm not going to get. But remember, I said this to you last week or 2 weeks, whenever we talked, that I hate. I don't think anybody should open with a division rival. I really don't. And the Packers, I know that a lot's been made of this, but when you don't do much in preseason. And and I don't know what they do in practice, but it doesn't look like they did much in there either because they just seemed so out of sync. Mm-hmm. Rodgers and the receivers were not in sync all game. The offensive line was not in sync. The defense, which we were all we talked about from the day after the draft until last Saturday, was how good this defense was going to be and how, oh my God, they're going to do this and that. And and I was leading it. I was banging the drum. But they were out of sync. They're blown coverages, miscommunication. Mm-hmm. People said in the past, they had pressure. I love this. I love people that tell me about pressure. Packers got a lot of pressure on Cousins. And what did it amount to? They had one sack.
One sack.
I don't hear about pressure. That's the most useless stat ever. Oh, other than yards gained. That's up there, too, with useless stats. Points scored. But I don't care about yards. And I don't care about pressure. Here's where I care about pressure. I only count it as a pressure if Rashawn Gary pressures Cousins into an interception or pressures Cousins into intentional grounding or pressures Cousins where he just throws the ball out of bounds. It's not a pressure when he still completes a 15-yard pass. Mm-hmm. That's not a pressure because the Vikings made a good play. I don't care that he came close to getting – no, that doesn't count.
Yeah. Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
Yeah. And pressure, that's a dumb, meaningless stat. I'm tired of hearing about, percent of pressure. That's just a made-up stat by these nerds that never played football, probably never even watched it. They sit in their basement and come up with these analytical stats that make no sense.
Right.
They had one sack. That's what counted. Rashawn Gary had a sack. Nobody else had a sack. And they had no turnovers. Defense played terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're supposed to get this pass rush is supposed to get sacks, the secondary is supposed to cause turnovers, and they didn't do it. They had one sack, no turnovers.
My thing with the game after 4 days is that I had to take a step back this year because I told you what I thought the record was going to look like, more closer to 11-6, which is a step back from what they've had the last three seasons. And so in order for that to happen, they're going to lose some games that are going to really frustrate us. Hopefully Sunday was one of them. We got one of those out of the way. But that was against a pretty good opponent. I mean, I don't think the Vikings are the best team in the NFC, but I put them above average. And I think as a division rival or division opponent, too, that was going to be a tough game on the road. So maybe that's just a regular loss. That's not even one of the befuddling losses that we're going to suffer through the rest of this season. But one game at a time here. But now you've got the Bears coming up this weekend, and they beat the Niners. And we can talk about that a little bit as we break down the defense against the Bears offense. Week one, obviously, like you said, the anomalies, all sorts of weird stuff happens. I think if they play 10 times, the Bears, they'd be lucky to win a second game. And there, you know, maybe it was week one, maybe it was partially the field conditions being wet, whatever it was, and in Soldier Field, and, you know, good for them. You know, and actually, honestly, if you think about it, I know that the Niners aren't as scary as they have been in the past because, you know, it's not Jimmy G anymore. You got Trey Lance in there, and I don't know if they're going to make a quarterback change. I don't know if they're going to make a quarterback change, but their defense is still pretty good. They still have some pretty good weapons. The Niners could still end up being a really good team this year. I still am more worried about San Francisco than I am Chicago, and that's after last week, too. So good. I'm glad the Bears beat them. That's, you know, one loss for the Niners that they probably weren't expecting, and none of us were. And so that's good. And I'm sure they're very glad that Minnesota beat us. So, but I don't know that we're going to get any better clarity, even if the Packers go out and curb stomp the Bears this weekend, because I still think the Bears aren't going to be very good this year. And it's in Green Bay. So, yeah, you expect them to have a huge bounce back. Now, last year, when they came back home and played the Lions on Monday Night Football, I was in the house for that one. They didn't, they sleptwalked through the first half. It wasn't until the second half that they came on and pulled away and made it more comfortable, and it was, everyone was happy and, you know, dancing in the rain. It was raining at Lambeau. But the Lions came out and went down and scored on their first possession and actually had a lead early in that game there. So I think anything is on the table this weekend, from the Packers not looking great at the beginning and coming on strong at the end, to coming out and just, like I said, boat racing the Bears from start to finish, or somehow they managed to lose again to a much lesser Bears team at Lambeau. And then you got two divisional losses to start the season. I mean, I'm obviously talking worst case scenario here, but even if they win, I'm still going to be sitting here next week. If you ask me, what do you think of this team? I'm still going to be holding both hands up, kind of shrugging, because it's like, I don't know if I can take anything away from this week and last week. It's only two games, and clearly this team needs a little bit of time to find itself. And 2 years ago, they started with the Vikings, Mark, to your point about starting against a division opponent. 2 years ago, they started with the Vikings, and they had a pretty good day and pulled away from Minnesota and ended up winning that game there, too. So the NFL would look at us and say, well, hey, you know, they've swapped wins in the last three seasons. So I guess it's not a bad idea to have teams start off against division opponents.
Listen, you know, it's not like you don't know your schedule. Like, the schedule comes out in, what, May. So I just think that it bothers me that they weren't prepared. And they, I'm sure they, in their minds, they were prepared, but they certainly didn't look prepared. And I, you know, like I said, I'd rather be the Eagles playing the Lions, or the Ravens playing the Jets, or even the Rams playing the Bills. I mean, I'd just rather not open it. And there were some other, there were a few other division games last week, right? Cleveland, Cincinnati played Pittsburgh and lost.
Jeez, that game was, as many have said, was drunk. Just absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I'm just saying, the schedule is what it is. What I want to see out of the Bears game this week, and this can lead us into talking about what we're supposed to talk about, the Packers defense versus Bears offense. I just want to see a more concerted effort on both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. I want to see the offensive line be a little more cohesive. Now, for the news of the day, as everybody knows, we taped this Wednesday evening. It goes up Thursday morning. The first practice back after the game, everybody practiced except John Runyon Jr., who was in concussion protocol. So you didn't think he would practice the first day. We'll see if he practices Thursday and Friday.
Well, and Chris Barnes is on IR, so we're not counting him, because he's not on the roster now.
They put him on injury reserve and brought up Caleb Jones, But I mean, Lazard was out there. Bakhtiari and Jenkins were out there. Good sign. I'm not saying they're going to play, but if they weren't out there, and they certainly wouldn't play, but they were out there. The good news, Quay Walker looks like he's fine. He was full participant in practice, so it looks like he'll be good to go.
Yeah, Keyshawn Nixon was a full participant, so he's back. That shoulder, that stinger looked. I don't know if it was a stinger. It looked pretty bad.
It looked like a stinger.
Yeah, and then Domofsky put up some other notes here. I know that we're doing defense today, but Lazard practiced for the first time since he got stepped on two weeks ago, so that looks good. I don't know if he'll play or not. And then Bakhtiari and Jenkins both did individual drills on Wednesday. The team portion was closed to the media, so they don't know if he practiced or not.
They'll find out tomorrow when they talk.
Yeah,
you know, talk to the coaches. But getting back to I want to see the offensive line. Like you said, if they win, you'll still be shrugging. But, and I maybe too. But I just want to see the offensive line, which I know is good and is better than they looked last week. I want to see them play better. I want to see Rodgers and his receivers be on the same page more often. And a lot of it was on Rodgers. I'm not gonna just blame the young receivers. I'm gonna blame Watson for the first play of the game when he dropped the touchdown pass. But that was a great ball. I can't blame Rodgers for that. He threw a beautiful pass, you know, deep ball. For those that were worried about Rodgers being able to throw deep, well, he threw deep on the first play of the game, and the kid dropped it. But after that, there were, you know, and everybody's been putting it up on social media, you know, plays where he had Tonyan open, he had one of the kids open, and he, you know, he didn't see him. He was looking here or there. A couple of times he held the ball a little too long. Rodgers didn't play well, let's be honest. He admitted it himself, and he did not have a good first game. And, you know, so I expect him to be better. But now let's get to the defense, which is what we got to talk about. More times than not, I've covered football I covered the Eagles for 32 years. I've been I don't want to say I cover the Packers, but I've been writing about the Packers for the last 5 years now. I'm a guy that puts it on. Coaching is coaching, you know. I always say players win games and players lose games more so than not. I think Joe Barry was outcoached by the Vikings offensive people last week a lot. Mm-hmm. I know the players may have made mistakes, and there was blown coverages and miscommunication and some of that, but some of that's got to be on why were they doing what they were doing. Why Jair Alexander has to be around Justin Jefferson all the time. I can see a play here, a play there, maybe or something happens, but I mean, I read all of Flores quotes and Barry's, but oh well, you know, and then you have listen. I covered Buddy Ryan's defenses early on in my tenure covering the Eagles. Then I spent a lot of time with Jim Johnson in the later part, you know, of my Eagle, but under Andy Reid and all those years when they were very good. And Bud Carson, I covered Bud Carson's Eagles defenses, which were very good. That's three very good defensive minds. They matched up. They didn't make excuses. I mean, under Buddy, Eric Allen covered the best receiver on the other team.
Mm-hmm.
Under, you know, Jim, when he had Bobby Taylor and Troy Vincent, Troy covered the fast. You know, most back then, you know, most teams would have a speedy receiver and then a big receiver. Troy covered the fast one and Bobby covered the tall one. You know, and then they would give help, safety help, whatever, but that's the way it was.
There was a clear strategy and a clear attitude week to week, whereas I think where you're headed here is that the Packers just seem to be trying to outthink themselves every week instead of just saying, this is what
play
we are.
Ball. I mean, listen, I'm not a defensive coordinator. I'm a retired writer. But I covered enough football, and like I said, I learned from guys like Buddy Ryan and Bud Carson and Jim Johnson where it's not that hard. The Packers have three excellent corners who are very diverse in their skills. Mm-hmm. Jair gets the best guy. Stokes gets the fast guy. Razul gets the big, strong guy. ABC. It's simple. Mm-hmm. It's not that hard. Mm-hmm. Play man-to-man. Let those three cover. Blitz some guys if you want to blitz, get a little pressure. I mean, do whatever you want to do, but you have three very talented and, well, Stokes is for a first-round pick. I mean, I'm sure he's making – all three make pretty good money now. Jair is the highest-paid corner in the league, right? Razul just got a new contract, and Stokes gets paid like a first-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Let them earn their money. Don't play zone. You play zone when you're not good, when you can't match up, when you have – you know, those bad, like, you know, Kevin King and Darius Randall at corner. Then you play zone because you're afraid to play man because you're going to get killed. Play man. Now, this week they're playing the Bears. Bears receivers aren't very good. So I don't know what, I mean, you do whatever you want against them, I guess. But when you have, I always like, good coaches play to their strengths, whether offense or defense. I mean, Don Shula, right, the winningest coach of all time. When he had Larry Zonka and Jim Kick way, way, way back, they ran the ball all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And let Bob Greasy, you know, manage the offense, throw a pass here and there. Then when he had Dan Marino, well, he ain't going to run the ball then. He threw the ball all the time, mm-hmm. right? You play to your strengths. The Packers' strength, in my opinion, is they're three very good cornerbacks. So let them play to that strength.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking going out there and playing zone against a Vikings team that has the talent to very easily beat zone. I mean, you've got Justin Jefferson, who's a one-man wrecking crew, and he was against the Packers on Sunday. And he's beaten the Packers a couple times in the past, so it's not like he's surprising us. We know Dalvin Cook is really, really good and speedy as a running back. And I know we're talking about like the coverage. Adam Thielen is a smart, heady wide receiver. You can say he's lost a step or he's not what he was before, but that smarts, it's almost like the Jordy Nelson factor. He may not be the quickest, fastest, but he knows where to sit and go and be open. And
but Rasul would have taken him out of the game.
And making some plays. So I don't know if that was the Packers being arrogant and saying, I think we might have a better opportunity to play zone than other teams, and we can match up and we can figure it out, and they can just, if they get beat, they can make up for it or whatever. I have no idea, but it does get a little bit easier this week. And I will tell you, as far as the Bears go, first of all, it was not favorable conditions to throw the ball much. So Justin Fields only threw it 17 times. He was 8 for 17.
He only completed 8.
He only completed 8. Yeah, he had 2 touchdowns, one to our former friend EQ. Equanimeous St. Brown's only catch of the game was a touchdown. And then he threw another one to Dante Pettis. Their leading receiver last week, for all the Packers fans who are upset that it wasn't a wide receiver for the Packers, David Montgomery, the running back for the Bears, he had 3 catches for 24 yards. He was their leading receiver in terms of how many passes he caught. Pettis had more yards, but Montgomery got 4 targets, caught 3 balls. The rest of everyone else had 1 catch or no catches. He was the
Pettis
only one with more than one catch,
right?
He had the long touch. Yeah, that was his only catch too, the 51 yarder.
Right.
That was it.
Pettis can run. Pettis is, you know, St. Brown, come on. The Packers can't let St. Brown beat him, can they?
Until I see better, anything's on the table. I have no idea what the Packers plan to do or what they're capable of, and if they were just, you know, saving all their best for the home opener, I don't know. But they now have a reputation for these clunky opening games. But, you know, then next year they'll end up at Lambeau in week 1 and they'll come out with their hair on fire and they'll say, oh, no, we're fine. We're good with openers. Maybe it's just road openers. And the reason, and everyone talked about it too, and one of the reasons why they think that the Packers were so competitive in 2019, because in 18 they won the opener in LaFleur's first game, but it was 7-3. It could not have been a less offensive, fireworkish type game. They beat the Bears 7-3 on that. I think Graham had the touchdown. That was it. And Amos had the game-sealing interception. But in 2020, right, it was the year coming off of COVID. There's no fans in the stands. Nobody had preseason anything. Everybody was really on a level playing field. But the Vikings really didn't play much of their starters in the preseason either. So I think it has a lot to do with the vibe, the mentality, the confidence. We've talked about LaFleur. I talked about it on Quick Slants and said, hey, it's one game out of 17. I'm not going to sit here and make it sound like I'm throwing up the sirens and waving the flag of concern. There's still plenty of time for the Packers to be okay, but we now have enough of a sample size. We have 3 full seasons and an opener now of where they failed and how they failed. And when they do, they just look just butt ugly doing it. Their losses are never like, oh man, it was by a fingernail and you get beat on the last play of the game.
They've had a couple like that, but they have more, you're right, they have more of these, like Sunday's game, the Saints game last year.
Where they just blow it in every facet, and it's just like there's no redeemer at all with some of these games. And it's the Vikings. I get it. You know, you came up against a really tough Niners team in the playoffs, and in 2019, they lost both times to the Niners pretty bad, but San Francisco, I think, was just a much better team that year. Okay, and then, you know, that loss to the Vikings in 2020 at Lambeau, that was a weird one on a windy day. It's just like, you know, they just have these performances where you're just like, who is this team? Like, I don't understand what it is that.
Well, here, let me say this about last week. As bad as it was, right? And we both agreed that we've just gone over the effort and this and that and other thing. I still think if Watson catches that pass, it's a different game. I think that set the tone, good or bad. I mean, and I know what you're going to, I say what you're going to say, because I, what you're going to say when we talked about this off the air. I mean, you know, they didn't put that play in Sunday afternoon.
No.
That was all week. All week they said, we're going to listen. Our first play is going to be this. And whether it's the first play of the game or the first play of, the Packers don't know if they're getting the ball or kicking off, you know, until they flip the coin. So, but they knew that their first play was going to be a bomb to Watson. They probably put that in maybe 2 weeks prior. Who knows how soon.
And how long has it been since you've seen a Packers receiver that wide open behind the defense? I can't remember.
Probably MVS.
Even with MVS. But even with MVS, for some reason, Rodgers would always throw him, underthrow him, and then he couldn't take advantage of the separation. But
he did some. I mean, MVS had a share of bombs, so, I mean, there was some. But, I mean, so they put, if he catches that and it's a touchdown, I'm not saying the Packers win the game. I don't know. Who knows what happens after that. But it just set the tone, and it just, from there on, it was just like, oh, man. And Rodgers, you know how Rodgers gets. You know, he didn't throw to him again until there was 4 minutes left in the game.
Right. Yeah, he gets really frustrated. I mean, he was frustrated on the sideline.
Yeah.
He wasn't as demonstrative. He's been saying all the right things. He understands they're young wide receivers, and he's got to work on getting in sync with them. And he had some nice things to say about Dobbs and Christian Watson. Interestingly enough, when he was asked about Amari Rodgers, he's like, well, Amari's returning for us, and that's about all I've got for you there. So Amari Rodgers...
Yeah, well, he didn't play a snap.
I'll just tell you right now, he's done. He's done as a receiver. Amari Rodgers is a special teams player on the Packers. If he can't do anything on special teams, they got to get rid of him because he can't play wide receiver. He's done. The light bulb's not going to go off. He's not going to improve. He's not going to get better. This kid cannot play receiver, straight up. So, I don't know. Maybe Juwan Winfrey, if he's going to be that good on special teams, you keep him. And if he's that good of a returner, okay, that's fine. But
he's not that good a returner.
Juwan Winfrey caught a ball on Sunday, and I know that Rodgers has more confidence in him than he does in Amari Rodgers. So take that for what you will.
Now I know why those rumors that were out there. I mean, not rumor. Oh, whatever you want to call them. Like after the Chenault got traded from Jacksonville, and the rumor was that the Packers were involved
to Carolina.
Yeah, I should have known that, right? He didn't play much. Well, I guess he just got there. He didn't know the off. It's going to take time. But the rumor was the Packers were talking to Jacksonville. And I'm thinking, what the deal was there. Why didn't he? And then Jalen Reagor, the Eagles trade him to the Vikings. Well, now it all makes sense. If they would have gotten either one of them, maybe they were offering Rodgers for them.
Yeah,
maybe the other team said no, we don't want him. We don't want Rodgers either. Because I was wondering, neither one of them went for much. I mean, it's not like Carolina or the Vikings gave up a lot to get either Chenault or Reagor, and both of those guys are return guys. So I think if the Packers would have gotten either one of them, Rodgers was gone.
Yeah. Well,
and I think they probably offered, and I think Rodgers to Jacksonville might have been a. That would have been a good trade, Rodgers for Chenault, for Chenault, because it would have reunited Rodgers with his college quarterback, Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I don't know how much
that. That seems to be the thing to do now, right? I mean, Adams wanted to go play with Derek Carr, and
But if you're Doug, if you're Doug Peterson, do you want to put your job on the line and trade away a good receiver for a guy that can't even get on?
He got nothing for him. He didn't get anything for Chenault. He got a 6 and a 7.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, let's see what Jacksonville does with that 6 and 7. Who are they going to? I mean, I'm just saying, it's not like he got a lot for Chenault. They didn't. Obviously, Jacksonville didn't want Chenault, so they gave him away. But they didn't want Rodgers either. Obviously.
Well, what I was going to say, which you alluded to a little bit earlier, is that the Packers have to stop doing this thing where just because something goes wrong, a receiver drops a ball, they give up a touchdown, something bad happens, a guy gets hurt, something like that. They can't just do this shrivel up and curl up into a ball thing. You know, like this, the idea that they mentally just, they get checked out and they get pistol whipped when something bad happens and they can't recover from it is just, it's like the kid on the playground. I said this to you off the air. It's like the kid on the playground who misses his first shot playing basketball and takes the ball and walks away and leaves the game. Like you've got to have more moxie and perseverance in you than that. And this is what I'm watching Matt LaFleur for this season is how does this team, because they're going to have other games where they're not going to, things aren't going to go well. They're going to lose more games. They're going to have to come back, bounce back. They might be tough losses or, games they want to win, or they might lose to a lesser team. They have to be able to bounce back and let it go and still be able to compete and play to their level. They can't just shrivel up like they did. And let that song and dance is getting old, and it's gonna start to become more of the hallmark of Matt LaFleur's teams where they're just, and this happened a little bit during the McCarthy years after the Super Bowl. They were known as being these front runners. You know, look at 2011. Oh, the offense was so good. They were always ahead. They barely had to play from behind. So that terrible defense they had in 2011 didn't matter because they didn't have to hold on to anything. They were always ahead by two scores, right? Well, it's not like that anymore. Now that the defense has to hold serve and they've got to play well and protect the lead, and they didn't do very well. Like you said, we kind of broke that down against Minnesota, and I'm really curious to see what the plan is going to be against the Bears. Now it's a lesser quarterback. They don't have the receivers. As far as receivers, it's Dante Pettis, who you said is he's speedy. Now they have EQ St. Brown. Darnell Mooney is still there. He only had one catch for 8 yards, 3 targets, and Byron Pringle. I mean, those you know, and Cole Kmet's a good tight end, but he didn't catch a ball.
Tight end from Notre Dame.
He had one target, no catches at all. And they still, and then as far as running backs, Khalil Herbert caught one ball for -2, and then you've got Montgomery as the, you know, the feature back there. So the Packers should have an opportunity to at least play better. I don't know if they're going to play great, but they have a chance to play better.
If this defense is, and you know, if this defense is what they say they are and what they think they are and what everybody has written that they are, they should just shut the Bears down.
Mm-hmm.
There should be whatever. The offense, like I said, is still, it should get a little better this week, I think, especially if Lazard's back. Tonyan has a game under his belt now. I'd like to see them use him more. Love to see Aaron Jones get more than eight touches. But defensively, there's no way that – there's no Justin Jefferson on the Bears. There's no Adam Thielen on the Bears. There's no Dalvin Cook on the Bears.
Right.
Montgomery's a nice little all-around back, but, you know, stop him. Make Fields throw. Keep Fields in the pocket. Don't let him beat you running the ball either. I would spy him, actually. I mean, you shouldn't have to worry about guys in coverage. I might let Walker spy Fields. Man up those receivers – And get after it. The Bears' offensive line isn't great, so I like to see Gary and Preston Smith and Kenny Clark and, you know, Jerron Reed, you know, get after Fields a little bit.
They need to create some turnovers here. They need some swag. I mean, they need some swag going into that Week 3 game against the Bucs. And I'm not trying to overlook the Bears, but the Packers should win this game. I mean, the line is 10 points. So, like you said before we started, Vegas clearly doesn't care how bad the Packers looked against the Vikings. They still see the Packers as way better than the Bears to the tune of -10. They have to get some confidence heading into that game against Tampa, because that might be a long show, Mark, because we're going to have a lot more to talk about when you talk about defending Tom Brady, because whether you're playing man or zone, he's going to find a way he's going to have an opportunity to beat you. Now, the question is, because they look pretty good, did the Bucs against the Cowboys, the question is, was Dallas in Week 1 mode? Because they were playing at home. They still have Micah Parsons and a decent front there to be able to get after what I thought was going to be a more accessible Tom Brady with some of the offensive line issues that the Bucs have. But the Packers have to, you know, sandwiched in between two tough games is one that's very winnable that they have to have at home. And I think they'll get it. But after what I saw last week and the way that this last season ended, I mean, if you take out the Sean Mannion game where they beat the Vikings, you know, and this is partially my fault for not researching and looking it up, but I can't even remember who they beat before that was legitimate. I mean, it's been a long time.
Wasn't that Tennessee game last year?
2 years ago. That was two seasons. Yeah. That was two seasons ago.
They beat Baltimore. They didn't play great, but they beat Baltimore and Cleveland late last year, remember?
Well, the Cleveland game was ugly as well. That was on Christmas, and they very easily could have lost that game. And Baltimore, yes, they got a huge win on the road, but it was Tyler Huntley, not Lamar Jackson.
Who
so
played well, by the way, but still,
he did. But you know, I mean, it's like we're really digging back. We're going way back here to try to find, you know, a quality game where the Packers played a solid game, and look, it doesn't matter to me. Just win. I don't care if they win.
Real good win was the Rams,
probably. And
they beat the Rams, pretty good. That was a good win. They played well. That was a good. You know, the Rams won a Super Bowl, so they beat a good team. Then after that, they blew out the Bears, who, you know, Bears weren't better Bears. Then the Ravens and Browns back-to-back. Then the Vikings with a backup quarterback. And then the Lions game didn't matter, and they lost. And then they had to buy and then come out and lost San Francisco.
Yeah. I mean, it's just – there's – what do we got here? I mean, where is the perseverance for all of the decoration that Matt LaFleur gets and all of the accolades that he gets? And he was one win away from being historically good had they beat the Vikings in week one. I don't remember who he would have surpassed or been in very elite company with. His teams just don't show me anything that get me really excited when it really matters. I mean, they've beaten you've beat the Rams. You know, they beat the Rams in the playoffs 2 years ago. They beat the Rams. Those were both at Lambeau Field, and they've had some good, you know, they've had some good games. They won in San Francisco last year. They showed us something when when Elton Jenkins was out. That was Josh's first start. You know, he neutralizes and takes care of Nick Bosa, and they beat the Niners, and that was big. That was a big deal. That was a game that they weren't expected to win that they did. But Matt LaFleur's team, and you know, last year, remember last year too, he had that heart to heart with Joe Barry and was like, "Hey, you gotta do something for us and help us out here and get aggressive or figure out what your game plan is." And I tweeted out on Sunday and said, "Maybe that heart to heart should just happen now. Like, let's just get it out of the way." Yeah. If that's what you have to do every year. By the way, Matt LaFleur, you're the one that hired Joe Barry. So, and when you did, in fact, when that hire happened, you, me, and Paul were recording. Yeah. And I mentioned it in the middle of the show, and I remember just waiting for a reaction, and there was at least a half to a full second of silence because...
Well, it kind of came out of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
Because that was, if you remember...
They wanted Leonard, and Leonard said no.
That's how we began the show, talking about Leonard saying no.
Right.
But in all the rumor... Like after that, it was supposed to be, it was, according to reports, it was down to three people. And I don't remember. Leonard was one, obviously, and he said no. And then the other two were, Barry was like fourth, if I remember correctly. I forget who the other two were. One was the guy who was, he was also a Rams assistant, who I think ended up either getting promoted by the Rams or going to the Chargers. Barry kind of came out of, Barry was in, I mean, they obviously interviewed him, but he wasn't considered one of the favorites. And then all of a sudden he was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's, I remember when we were like, that's why they was like, wait, they hired who?
Right.
So, yeah, that kind of took us a little by surprise. I thought Joe Barry had a terrible game last week. I did. I gave him, when I do my analysis after game, I give a defensive a hero and a zero and offensive and all that. I gave him the defensive zero because I just thought his game plan was awful. He let the one guy that you can't let kill you. And then he also ran a lot of light boxes with two down line. That's when Cook hurt him a little bit. So like the Vikings were ready for, I mean, the Vikings coach, offensive coaching staff, their game plan was much better than Joe Barry's game plan. And and they won that battle, and that kind of led to the Vikings winning the game. Now the defense, I'm not going to blame the defense totally for the loss because the Packers only scored 7 points. So you can't ask the defense to have a shutout. The defense did play better in the second half. They only allowed 6 points in the second half. So they did do some things better. But this defense, like you said, you know, this week I expect a big effort. I expect a couple more sacks. I expect a couple turnovers. I mean, you know, but the Packers turned the ball over twice last week. Rodgers fumbled. Rodgers threw an interception. The Packers defense didn't get the ball back for him at all. So that's minus two on that level. Packers also got sacked 4 times, only had one. That's a minus three on that level. So they're the important stats to me: sacks, turnovers, and then points, obviously. But I expect the defense to come out, shut the Bears down, give the offense good field position. Offense goes down, gets some easy points. Now, you know, put the Bears in a hole. That kind of takes the running game away from him a little bit. Make Fields throw to that group of receivers that we already talked about isn't very strong.
Right.
And then Cruz, win this game going away.
Pressure. I think you got to be more aggressive. Just send the pressure. And yeah. I know that you're asking for some trouble because David Montgomery is a good running back and Justin Fields is a mobile quarterback and he can run. And I think that can create problems for the Packers defense. But this is where you see... How did you feel like, I know you didn't like the defense overall, but how did you feel about Quay Walker in week one?
Well, he played well.
I thought so too. And I know he's banged up a little bit here, but I think you see now what they have that they have not had before, which is somebody that can at least slightly neutralize some of that running threat if it happens. So if you're going to send a DB on a blitz, you're going to send an extra linebacker, you know, whatever it be, or Devondre Campbell, whoever it be, or maybe it is Quay, you know, send some additional pressure. You've got the guys in the middle now to mitigate what can happen if you have any issues or if Fields is able to escape. But I feel like with Chicago's offensive line,
I would use Walker as a spy on Fields.
To your point though, the offensive line, if it's not very good, like I don't know if you need to spy a guy who's getting collapsed on. And I think Kenny Clark is way better than any of the Bears' offensive linemen.
Yes.
And Jerron Reed had a decent game. T.J. Slayton is eating up bodies, and he's able to clog some things up there too. So I just, for some reason, I don't think Joe Barry had a very good pulse on where some of the strengths of his defense were. Now the defensive back thing and playing zone, that's just almost negligent. Like that again, I don't know. We could sit here for days and come up with theories, and I don't know if any of them would hold water as far as what really led to them wanting to play zone in that game. But you've got to have a sense of what your team and your players are good at. You know, I mean, Jair, Eric Stokes, they can both man up. And I think Rasul, to an extent, can as well. But that's not his strength more. Rasul's strength is more on what's in front of him. So I don't know how good things go if he gets taken deep, and I think teams will try to test him that way.
You don't put him on the burner. You put him on the big strong guy,
right?
Even a tight, I might put him on the tight end, Corey Mann.
Well, and that's, but to your point though, like take a page, and hopefully they listen to our show, Mark, because take a page from some past defensive coordinators who are highly successful, who have great resumes, who are some of them in the Hall of Fame, as far as, look, this is what your assignment's going to be. You tell them going into week one, you're going to take the biggest guy every single week. Don't worry about coming to me and saying, you know, what's the scheme, what's the play call, whatever. Whoever the biggest guy is, you're going to take this guy. You're going to take the fastest guy. You're going to take, you know, and that's what it should be. And I'm not saying that you just, you know, you simpleton it like that, but sometimes the solution is simple. Yeah, but that's, yes, sometimes the answer is
it, right, that's the old line, right?
It is easier sometimes. The simplest, most obvious answer is actually the answer. Joe Barry and Matt LaFleur, don't overthink it, don't outthink yourself here. So as far as attacking, I mean, that the big thing right now is they're gonna have to try to avoid getting gashed once again by a running court, but this is why you got Quay Walker. And I will tell you another thing too. Didn't play very many snaps on defense, but I saw some good hustle out of Devontae Wyatt as well. Okay. in his few snaps too. He hustled and chased down a couple of plays from the backside. He was, I mean, you know, he still needs time, but I thought that he did okay. So It's the Bears. I don't know how much else we can sit here and really pontificate as far as what the Packers need to do. They need to hit them in the mouth is what they need to do. Like you said, like
just jump out
and cruise. Right.
Here's another thing I would do too. And I know analytics, that's what the way of the world is now. And it's all it does is help you lose games. But if the Packers win the toss Sunday night, or I guess the Bears will call it. So if the Bears lose the toss Sunday night, give me the ball. I know all of a sudden everybody kicks off now to start the game. Well, guess what? Packers kicked off and it was 7-0.
Mm-hmm.
Take the ball. Give me the ball. Let me go down and take a 7-0 lead. I'll worry about the second half in the second half. Give me the ball. I want to go down and take the lead.
Yeah.
Nobody, you know, in overtime you don't give the ball up, do you?
No, of course not.
I'm being crazy there. But you know what I'm saying? Everybody kicks off now because they try to get that double. Well, we'll get the ball at the end of the half and then we'll get the ball. You know, every last year I had the stat going where the Packers always elected to kick off, and I think it was 12 times in the 17 games last year, the other team scored first, got the ball and scored on them,
mm-hmm,
for their field goal or touchdown.
Well, that would have been a great idea if Joe Barry and if they had any clue what they were trying to do on defense, or if they had a decent game plan. That would have been a great idea to start out on defense,
but MVP, a quarterback, right? My quarterback's the MVP.
Justin Jefferson, I mean, he walked into the end zone. It was embarrassing. It was that first drive was really, really putrid. That was not good.
No, I mean, in the whole first half, you know, they let them, they kind of let the Vikings dictate the game.
Yeah.
And again, the other play besides the drop was fourth and goal at the one. They got to get in there.
I don't. Colin runs out of shotgun and just all the things that you don't do well and teams don't typically do well. I just don't. I don't understand it. I really don't understand.
That was a run option, I think. And that's one play where Rodgers probably should have thrown or kept it himself, and he could have jogged in on a little bootleg.
Yeah.
You know, they again, the Vikings guessed right and won that battle.
Yeah.
But again, Dylan might have to, you know, he's a big boy. He's supposed to be able to get through there.
Yeah.
He did on his other touchdown. He did run people over.
Well, I mean, he's got, you know, he's Quadzilla, but when you've got, you know, three or four guys meeting you at the line of scrimmage, like that's a tough task. That's a big ask to make. And, you know, water under the bridge, I mean, that one's over with. At least they got the one good thing is they got the road game at Minnesota out of the way, and we won't have to see that building again for another at least year, probably longer. So now we move towards before we sign off here, as far as how things are going to go, I think we didn't officially do it, but I think we both said we thought the Packers were going to win. I said it on the show, but then by the time we got to Saturday and before the game, I was not feeling like the Packers were going to win. But
yeah,
I did.
Well, when I heard when we did the show last week, there was still hope, maybe faint hope, but hope that Bakhtiari and Jenkins were going to play. Remember, we were still talking, they both practiced, and then it came out Friday that Bakhtiari didn't practice, and he said, oh, he ain't playing.
Yeah, I have a
Which Packers went from favorite to underdog
right
morning.
Yeah,
oh, it so flipped. That told you something.
A point and a half to a point and a half. So was that it for you when you found out on Sunday they weren't playing?
What's that?
Weren't
playing. I was still, you know, I'm always hopeful, but let's put it this way. A friend of mine called me and said, hey, I like the Packers. I'm gonna bet the Packers. What do you think? And I said, no, don't bet them. So I saved him some money.
Yeah, I had a couple friends that asked me if I should start the Packers defense, and I was like, not in week one. I don't know enough about them and Justin Jefferson. Like, I didn't feel good about that matchup, and I was like, man, I'll feel terrible if they end up with three turnovers and the Packers away with it.
Well, you helped your friend.
I did. Oh, I definitely did in a major way. It would have been bad. It would have definitely been bad. So this week against the Bears, point spread aside, and let's just assume Jenkins and Bakhtiari, neither of them are going to play, so that we can make a fair assessment here of what you think. How do you see this one shaking out?
I think they win. I'm going to say 21-7.
Okay. Wow. I have them scoring 28, but I see it more like 28 to 21, and I know 21's a lot of points. That's a lot of points for the Packers to give up to a bad Bears team.
So you need the Bears cover.
We've seen it before. Well, and there could be a special team score in there somewhere.
Hey, special teams was one thing that they didn't do anything. They weren't terrible.
So they're due for their terrible moment. But you know, get that bad moment out of the way in a game that the Packers are going to win anyway. So that's fine. It's kind of like that Eagles game a couple years. Yeah, Rager brought the ball back for a touchdown, but the Packers were in pretty good shape and they
Bears
did okay.
Don't have Devin Hester anymore, right?
No, or Grant, who had a big day against them last year too, which was, you know, again, that's more than we need to deal with and more than we need. So hopefully some of the stank of last week gets washed away as this one takes place on Sunday night against the Bears at Lambeau Field. Home opener, crowd's going to be wild and crazy. Just don't do the wave, because otherwise the quarterback's going to chastise you in his presser afterwards. He's going to get all upset and butthurt that people are doing the wave at Lambeau Field, which, listen, if you're on offense or if they're on offense, you shouldn't be getting noisy. I don't know why we would need to tell anybody that in particular, as far as especially seasoned Packers fans. But, you know, try to keep the noise to a minimum if you're going to be in the stands at Lambeau.
Get loud when the Bears have the ball.
Get loud when the Bears have the ball. That's right. Real simple. So Packer reports up now, upcoming.
Up now is still my analysis of the game, but coming soon this morning, Thursday morning, depending on when you're listening. I just have a little bit of a Sunday night football Packer history. Just how they've done on Sunday night football. They've played the Bears 9 times on Sunday night football, more than any other team. They're 8-1 against them.
Mm-hmm.
And then some interesting Aaron. I don't want to give it all away because I want people to read it. Some interesting Aaron Rodgers Sunday night football stats.
Nice. Very good stuff. Well, and I'll have quick slants for breaking down the game on Monday morning for everybody who is inclined to check out what's going on over at Game On Wisconsin. The Quick Lines podcast will be out on Monday morning, and I'll talk about the game that was. Hopefully, it's a much better vibe than was this last week, actually. And I don't know if you know him, Mark. I had a nice conversation with Eric Thompson, who covers the Vikings for the Daily Norseman over at SB Nation.
I don't know him.
And great conversation with him after the game, just kind of talking about, even he was caught by surprise as far as the, you know, the ease that the Vikings had. But he's also very level-headed and understands the Vikings and their history. And if you go and follow Eric on Twitter, take a look at his pinned tweet. He's had it up for years. It's a Venn diagram. One circle is people who have nice things. The other circle is Vikings fans. And I'll just ask you if you think there's any intersection between those two circles right now. Thanks for riding along, everybody. This has been the Thursday edition of the Pack-A-Day podcast. We will be back at it again next week on Thursday. Enjoy the game, everybody. Stay safe wherever you're at. And as always, go Pack, go.